estimate that it's around 25%, and the remainder in Safe Corporation.
Is that increasing or decreasing?
Over time, it will increase, and the reason for that is that Safe Corporation is the organization that has the lower rate, the preferred rate, if you will, so that more and more of the standard type policies will be in Safe Corporation of Oregon.
So would it be safe to say then that Secretary of State really doesn't have all the authority necessary to handle auditing of all of Safe?
Again, if you are referring solely to the matter of financial audit, then there is, I believe, that question of jurisdiction between the insurance commissioner and Secretary of State. But my point is much broader than just whether or not Secretary of State would audit. I have no problem whatsoever with the Secretary of State's audit authority. I would have no trouble with the Secretary of State auditing both Safe Corporation and Safe of Oregon. No trouble with that at all. My problem has to do with the broad power that the Secretary of State would achieve, totally aside from the question of auditing, the broad power that would be achieved through the passage of 2313. And it's not a question of auditing. It's a question of making judgments with respect to the propriety of expenditures, which is well beyond the question of auditing.
I understand that. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Johnson.
You made some really strong statements, and they're rather broad and sweeping in their presentation. How did you come to these conclusions? Who did you discuss these concepts with to come to these conclusions? Because they're so broad and strong that it makes me just really edgy, and I'd like to know how you got to them, more than not just what I see here, but how in the world did you ever get to those conclusions?
Most of the conclusions that you see there and the allegation with respect to impact have been developed by our own staff internally over a fairly long period of time. House Bill 2013 has been out there for quite a while, and we have bisected it from every possible angle. And I would even suggest that there are many other problems that would arise given time as a result of this bill that we haven't even identified. We have tried to hit the more critical ones, but there are many others. But mostly from internal.
Were your legal staff involved? Were your legal staff
involved?
Yes,
indeed.
Deeply involved. They support this concern.
In fact, I gathered a great deal of background material input from all of our people, and I personally put together this presentation. This is not the product of a staff. It's my own.
But it does come with the input of your legal staff, other staff members of your management organization.
Correct.
At least of the board itself in the presentation.
The board...
It's so broad and sweeping, it makes me really uncomfortable. I don't know whether to believe it or not, because it's so... I can't believe the bill has that much impact, and yet you're saying so, and I want to know how you got there.
Representative Johnson, let me make one point. It is not the provisions of 2313 that has the impact. It's the fact that 2313 makes us subject to 293505. Now, 293505 is a very simple little provision in the law that says that the Secretary of State has the authority to disapprove a claim paid out of funds deposited in state treasury. makes no provision whatsoever as to whether or not that disapproval is based on legality or otherwise.
Can we deal? Could we deal with your concerns if we try to address 293-505?
We could put SAFE's concerns totally to rest if we modified 293-505. And you have to recognize that 293-505 applies to state agencies in general. But if 293-505 were modified, or some addition were made in that provision, or in Chapter 293, that simply said that the Secretary of State would not have the authority to disapprove a claim unless it were clearly illegal, then we would have no problem whatsoever with it. But 505 allows for the disapproval of a claim regardless of whether it's legal or otherwise. So it does indeed allow a Secretary of State to apply judgment to
that.
Are
there any other areas now? Are there any other areas in the bill that bother you other than that particular state?
The area that beyond that is the provision in the bill that, and I suppose if we amended 293-505, it would take care of it, but I'll explain my concern. The provision in the bill that would require, all right, I will read, State Accident Insurance Fund Corporation in subsidiary formed or acquired shall notify the Secretary of State in writing of the measures taken and proposed to be taken to implement the recommendations of the audit report. It is the opinion of at least one of our in-house attorneys that if the Secretary of State made a recommendation in an audit report, even though we might be opposed to that recommendation, and we might have good and sufficient reasons for not implementing it, that we would indeed be in violation, or at least we'd be in a hassle. And it was the opinion of our attorney that if we did indeed get into this kind of a hassle, we would lose it. Now, what that really means is that if the Secretary of State recommended that SAFE do something, in other words, a policy decision, and our board of directors, or myself for that matter, felt that that was not appropriate or would not be in keeping with existing policy laid down by our board, and we wrote to the Secretary of State and said, we don't believe we should do this, the Secretary of State would then have the authority under this law to force us to do it. That's the other major concern in the bill.
Are there any others now? We've hit two major. Excuse me.
There was a suggestion that that SAFE be returned to control of the affirmative action guidelines, the state's affirmative action guidelines. We conform to the federal guidelines for affirmative action. And while we don't have a problem with conforming to state guidelines, we don't see any particular reason to change it. I think, however, if you take the concern with respect to 293-505 and you take the concern with respect to our requirement to respond to recommendations, if you take those two out of the bill, you don't have much bill left.
We just need to know what you're into, because those are such broad statements. Without some knowledge of how you got there, we
very very simply, what it amounts to is that the present law requires our board of directors to set policy with respect to SAFE. House Bill 2313 would give the Secretary of State an override authority over the policy set by the board. So you would have the board of directors attempting to set policy on the one hand, and the Secretary of State, in effect, second-guessing that policy on the other hand, making it rather impossible for the board to function according to the existing law. And my statement to the effect that it might be difficult for the governor to find somebody to serve on the board is, while it's my opinion, I believe that very strongly, because it is just, I wouldn't want to serve on the board under those conditions, because you would never know where you stood as a board.
You're saying that we might as well have the Secretary of State appoint the board.
Could be.
Okay. I mean, that's just assumption. That's just the substance of what you've said.
Correct.
I have nothing further. I think we've got a real problem here to deal with, and I hope we can go over and talk to some. I want to get some people in a room and talk about this, frankly.
Okay. I just was informed a few minutes ago that the Republicans are going to be caucusing at 10:45. That's about 18 minutes away. I want to reach. You know, I'm at the pleasure of the committee as far as we have reconsidered 2313. It's back in our possession. I'm amenable to whatever motions might be made, but I, Representative Shiprock, I don't want to cut off your question. Feel free to go ahead, and if there's any final concluding comment by anyone who's commented so far, I want to like you to have that opportunity. But I also want to know we have House Bill 2908, and we have the members of the Employment Appeals Board here, and I want to provide them at least some time to present their bill and their agreement and some testimony that they've gone to some trouble to prepare.
I'd like to ask, Mr. Chair, that we set this over for one further hearing, one only. It's my intent to get some members together, the participants, and really get down to the bottom of what in the world's going on here. And with your permission, I'd like to have it set over for 1 week, and then we'll deal with this thing one way or another.
Mr. Faulkner, go ahead.
I have a conflict for a week from today.
Okay.
And in the afternoon of Thursday afternoon, okay, and Friday of next week.
Wednesday,
I believe Wednesday.
On Wednesday. And we'll have a resolution one way or another.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Ford.
I'm very interested in this situation, and I will not be able to be here early Wednesday morning.
We'll have the answers to what's going on before then, I assure you.
Okay. Representative Shiprock.
I'll forego my questions if I can ask Representative Johnson his intent, and if it is to get the interested parties together and informally and discuss this.
That's exactly my intent.
I'd like to be included in any of those discussions, and I'll agree with the motion.
Okay, well, I'm at the disposal of the committee. Are there any motions on 2313? And if not, I assume that there's no objection to the request of Representative Johnson that we continue this to a work session on the 11th. Representative Lee.
Mr. Chairman, I'm agreeable to that, assuming that we have the commitment of the committee that we will act next Wednesday, one way or the other.
Yeah.
That's right.
Is that?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
I think. Having acted once before, I think there is sufficient interest that we act again in this area, but to the extent that members are willing to defer to Representative Johnson's request, I certainly have no objection to that request.
Mr. Chair, I'd just like to say one
Gore.
Thing. I think this could have been, our committee's time could have been saved much earlier if all the interested parties would have been interested in getting together and working it out, if there are truly some small technical problems to it, and I think everybody's dragged their feet because they didn't want to face the reality that the committee would act upon the issue, and I hope this doesn't continue to happen. That's all I have to say about it.
I would second your remarks, Representative. I think they're very appropriate. Okay, anything else, members of the committee? Anyone else on 2313?
Okay, if not, we'll conclude our work session. We will carry it over till Wednesday. Representative Ford, in deference to your schedule, we will set it for a time certain, and it will depend a little bit on the floor session, but we will not take it up until the latter half of the committee hearing.
I have a night flight back to Washington, D.C.
Okay. Okay, committee members, I'd like to ask your attention in our final 15 minutes of this hearing to House Bill 2908. While the folks who are here to appear on behalf of 2908 are coming forward, I apologize to others who are here on the other bills. We're not going to get to them. I am asking council to distribute some amendments that I have prepared again and have worked with the Employment Division on as far as House Bill 2015. And I've also, those will be available to members of the public as well. And we're also distributing copies of testimony that Mr. Young prepared on 2511 at our request in response to some questions tonight. I know I'd be available to discuss with members individually 2015 and the amendments I proposed. And I know Mr. Young, if there are any questions on 2511 or what we're trying to accomplish there, will be available as well. 2908. Gentlemen, if you feel free to introduce yourselves, and I apologize for the time crunch, but there are some things beyond even our control.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We appreciate your effort to get us on. Members of the committee, my name is Ross Morgan, and I am the chairman of the Employment Appeals Board. I have with me here today Tom O'Connell, who is the executive secretary for our board. In the back of the room is Pat Randall, who is one of the members of the board, Jerry Butler, who represents the business interest of the board, was not able to attend today. Libby Leonard also will be testifying on this bill because of the agency's request to make some amendments to the bill as well. I'll very hurriedly give you a little bit of background, and if I tell you more than you want to hear, why, let me know and I'll stop. The Employment Appeals Board is a quasi-judicial independent review agency consisting of three members appointed by and serving at the pleasure of the governor. Funding of the board is entirely provided by the U.S. Government of Labor through the Employment Division. No Oregon general fund dollars are involved. Board members are paid on a per diem basis. The rate of pay is an amount equal to 4% of the gross monthly salary of a regular judge of the circuit court. And that's for each day during which they are actually engaged in the performance of their official duties. Duties of the board members primarily consist of reading the transcripts of testimony which has been prepared from a recording of the testimony taken at the hearing before an Employment Division referee. In addition, the transcripts being read, the documentary evidence introduced at the hearing is also examined. It is also necessary to examine briefs filed by the parties. That means the claimants, employers, and the Employment Division. They must provide time to hear oral arguments as well. The board meets approximately every other week to deliberate the cases and enter our decisions. We have been averaging approximately 125 cases per meeting in the last 6 months. Staff for the board consists of two legal and two administrative persons. There's also a one part-time administrative person as well. Members of the board do not maintain state offices. Except for board meetings, our work is performed at home or at a regular business place or wherever the board member has a place to read transcripts. House Bill 2908 merely clarifies the position of the Employment Appeals Board as an independent review body. And it was put together in a very hurried way, and that's the reason, without a lot of consultation with the governor's office or with the agency or even members of the board. And so that's why we have a group of amendments here before you today, because the governor's office, the agency, and the board are now in agreement on these amendments that Mr. O'Connell will be explaining to you shortly. The board was created in 1959 due to the dissatisfaction with the Unemployment Commission, which was made up of Commissioner of Unemployment Insurance, the Commissioner of the State Accident Insurance Commission, and an individual appointed by the governor. The dissatisfaction occurred because employers and clients alike did not perceive they were receiving an independent review of the referee's decisions. In 1959, the legislature created an independent agency to administer the unemployment insurance program and simultaneously created an independent agency to review the decision of that agency's decisions. Due to some of the current statutory language and authority, there still remains some doubt that the board is not truly independent control of the employment division. This perception is a result of the employment division's authority to enact rules governing the board and the misunderstanding on the part of the public as to budget control. I must understand they have not been doing this, but the law did allow them to. We do not view this bill as creating any substantial changes in the way in which the law should be interpreted. The bill's only purpose is to remove all doubt that the board is an independent quasi-judicial review body and to prevent future misrepresentation of the law or misrepresentation of the status of the board. Now, Mr. Chairman, unless there's questions on that, I would defer to Mr. O'Connell to explain the amendments to the bill that we are suggesting.
Okay, that's fine. Council is prepared to distribute some additional materials, including Employment Appeals Board workload history. We won't go into any detail unless there are some specific questions. Why don't you go ahead, Mr. O'Connell?
Tom O'Connell, Executive Secretary, Employment Appeals Board. The bill that you have before you has been proposed to be amended by amending ORS 657.265. We felt, as did the Employment Division, that this amendment was necessary because there were problems involved due to the lack of authority of the Employment Division to correct common, ordinary, everyday errors made at the initial administrative level. We are in agreement that it's very essential that the Employment Division have the authority to correct these types of errors. And this amendment, which is the first amendment on the revised amendments you have before you, is directly related to another amendment further down in the bill. The witnesses for the Employment Division are here and are most qualified to testify on this particular amendment. Beginning at line 6 of the bill, we are seeking a change in ORS 657.275. It was felt this change was necessary because of some confusion surrounding the issue of whether an Employment Division referee may enter a new decision after a case is remanded by the board back to the Employment Division. The proposal in the bill and the amendment, as agreed upon, would clarify the authority of referees to enter a new decision in those cases where it is necessary upon remand. We have also another change in that statute which would delete the language regarding the board's decision becoming final within 10 days. The reason for this change is there is contained in another statute that you have 20 days from the time the board's decision becomes final to petition the Court of Appeals. This has confused people for years. What we would intend to do is simply state that you have 30 days from the date of service of the board's decision within which to petition the court, which would eliminate this confusion, and that is contained in our proposed.
No change in the actual time.
No change.
Okay.
It's just
clarification.
Right.
Okay, that's a point that I'm aware of. It's a source of confusion as well. Go ahead.
All right. On the bill, beginning at line 20, regarding 657280, one minor change which relates directly to the board enacting its own procedural rules, which I will get to in a moment. On page 2 of the bill, most of the changes seen there relate to corrections made by legislative counsel and provisions directly related to the board adopting its own rules. No substantial change there. Until we get to page 3, line 22 of the bill, there's really nothing of substance. We thought it necessary to change ORS 657.685 to make provision for operation of the board during absence of a board member or during periods of excessive workload. The way the law is now, the board would not be able to function if there were a prolonged absence of one of its members. And that would be because if two members could not agree, a decision could not be issued, and cases would be set over for an indeterminate period and create a backlog and also be injurious to the parties because of the delay. Additionally, should the workload increase over what we saw in January and February of this year, it may become necessary to temporarily increase the board's membership to take care of such backlog. Further amendment, as indicated in the amendments you have before you, to this statute would provide for the chairperson to have authority other than merely setting the time and place of the board meetings.
Yes, specifically.
Yeah, on the last issue that you discussed, the expansion of the board temporarily, how do you deal with the existing law that's on line 27 of page 3, not more than two members of said board shall belong to the same political party?
All right, sir. I think it would be easiest to find it in the engrossment, and that would be at page
8.
Would be on page 4 of the engrossed bill. I'm sorry.
Page 7, perhaps? It's page 8.
Page 8, yes.
Okay. And you have the same language remains in there, not more than two of the members have said the board shall belong to the same political party.
Nope.
I guess my concern is if you add some members to the board, how are you going to maintain that?
The language in the proposed amendment would accept the pro tem members from Senate confirmation and from that consideration.
I don't see that exception very clearly spelled out.
If there's a question, I think okay. I think it's a fair question, Representative Lee. I would ask you
to
consider
sorry.
A further amendment to clarify that.
Is it my understanding then that you do not consider the language except for pro temporary appointments?
I think what you need to do is to make that apply to the following sentence as well. It's not clear.
Very well.
That only applies to that one sentence.
The intent was to do that anyway. I'll agree with you. I don't think it's spelled out, but the intent would be to follow the same rule on these temporary appointments as the governor's appointment.
Okay. Let me, because some members of the committee have a caucus. I'm going to excuse those members, but I'm going to ask the balance of the committee to remain here for your testimony and that of others, I think particularly the Employment Division. And we will be able to remain here until 11. But if there are members who have to be excused for caucus, we understand that. Copies of your testimony and the material you've provided have been distributed. And I apologize because of the time crunch, but like I say, some things just kind of are beyond our control. Go ahead.
The amendment to the bill would provide for the chairperson to appoint any pro tem members with the approval of the governor, and the appointment will be limited to a period of 90 days.
Okay.
In the last section of the bill,
As printed.
Initially expanded the budgetary language contained in the current statute. And during our deliberations with the governor's office and the employment division, it was determined that the language currently in the statute was sufficient if the Employment Appeals Board would take more part in the budget-making process. So we would ask to amend that to delete the boldface and reinstitute the language now in the statute. And the very last item of the bill confers upon the board the authority to adopt its own procedural rules, and we do have an amendment to have that comply with the rulemaking authority and some exceptions contained in 657-280.
Okay. And I see